a calm sea, and the coastline with chalky cliffs and a patchwork of green fields. On a well-trodden path.
I'm on the south coast of England, in what is known as the Jurassic Coast. 150 million years ago, the land was ruled by dinosaurs. But the oceans were dominated by a mysterious sea monster.
The sea monster's ferocious teeth. Then it opens an eye.
Its remains are very rare, but some have just been discovered in the cliffs behind me.
And now fossil experts are working to unearth this extraordinary find.
No one's ever done this before, ever.
Extracting a giant skull halfway down a cliff face.
This colossal creature is called a pliosaur. But little is known about these prehistoric giants.
What an extraordinary, terrifying thing.
Together with a team of scientists, we will use new technology to discover more about this enormous marine reptile.
I have no doubt that this pliosaur was the T-Rex of the seas.
Comparing it with animals alive today, we can deduce a great deal about their sheer strength.
This pliosaur has a bite force that's about twice the great white shark.
Well, that's unimaginable.
Could this be the greatest Jurassic predator that ever lived?
The pliosaur diving to snap up its prey. BBC, Attenborough and the Giant Sea Monster, presented by David Attenborough. The dramatic Jurassic coastline.
Britain has a wealth of fossil sites, but perhaps none are quite so famous as this, the Jurassic coast.
Kimmeridge Bay, Dorset. Waves breaking gently on the shore.
I've been collecting fossils since I was a boy, and I haven't yet got tired of it. These days you're supposed to wear glasses for safety. And if you would know a locality, you begin to recognise the sort of block that might contain the fossil. And this rock was split earlier to make it easier to show you. And if I can hit it quite hard about there.
Taking aim, David hits the rock with a hammer, then it splits open to reveal a fossil, much to his delight.
What about that? Is anything more beautiful than that? Fantastic.
Finding even the smallest fossil is a thrill, but discovering something much larger can be an unforgettable moment. And that is exactly what happened to a fossil enthusiast who was walking along a beach near Kimmeridge Bay in Dorset one morning.
I just found something quite extraordinary. It's the jaw of a massive pliosaur. It's enormous. It's a massive pliosaur. It's the best fossil I've ever found. It must have just come out of a cliff up there somewhere.
Renowned fossil expert Steve Etches was called in, and he realised immediately that this find could be hugely significant.
Look, look at those teeth. Look, there's a tooth there, look. Let's have a look at the front. You can walk along here for hundreds of times and not find anything, and then occasionally you'll hit the jackpot.
And this certainly is the jackpot. It's the snout of an enormous pliosaur skull. And Steve suspects that the rest of the head might still be embedded in the cliff above. But he needs to work fast before the whole thing tumbles into the sea and is lost forever. So he quickly gathers a team of experts, including fellow fossil hunter Chris Moore.
It's day one of the dig. Steve and team of diggers are up on the cliffs. They're putting the net down to stop any loose rock rolling down and hitting us, and then we'll go down and expose the skull.
Steve and Chris have worked together for decades. But this is the biggest challenge they have ever faced.
Attached to ropes, the men are excavating the cliff face.
The location of the skull, high up on a disintegrating cliff face, makes it very difficult to reach and even harder to work on.
Some circular fossils at ground level.
These rocks were once mud on the sea floor, in which the remains of prehistoric marine creatures were buried. Over millions of years, the continents shifted, the seas receded, and today, as these cliffs erode, fossilized skeletons are revealed.
The jaw is there. The idea is to actually cut this down vertically, and then we form a platform where the fossil is.
They pull rocks away.
I've known Chris and Steve for many years, and I can't wait to join them and find out how they're getting on.
David's with Chris.
Here we've got a live feed to them actually digging halfway up the cliff face. What's happened so far, the tip of the snout's already come out and been recovered, so the rest of it is going into the cliff.
What exactly are they doing there?
At the moment, they're using tinfoil to try and protect the exposed piece of jaw.
In case something falls on and breaks it.
Yeah. And then they're also using superglue to consolidate the crumbly teeth and parts that have been weathered over millennia.
And they're hanging by ropes there?
Yes, pretty much in the centre of the cliff.
Dear me, pretty dangerous stuff, this.
Yeah, it really is. After you've worked there for a few hours, it becomes a bit more natural.
Yeah.
And you concentrate on the actual digging.
You must be pretty sure that there's something there to put this amount of effort into it, really.
Oh, positive there's something there. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful specimen.
Is it?
Yeah, amazing.
But what can this spectacular find reveal about the lives of these mysterious sea creatures and the world they inhabited?
Now David on a boat.
In the late Jurassic, Europe was an archipelago of islands, much closer to the equator than it is today. Its seas were warm, shallow, and teeming with life. And in these waters, underneath my feet, lurked the ultimate marine predator, the pliosaur.
As David looks over the side of the boat, a CGI grey-bodied pliosaur cruises past under the water. It has a wide body with four flippers and a long snout.
Unlike dinosaurs that lived on land, these colossal marine reptiles spent their whole lives in the ocean. They're thought to have been around 10 metres in length. That's about the size of a double-decker bus. They had long, broad flippers, short, strong necks, huge heads, and enormous jaws.
Under the water.
But there's still a lot we don't know about these great sea monsters, which is why this new discovery is so important. Steve believes that the entire pliosaur may still be inside the cliff, but it's the skull on which he's concentrating. A skull can reveal more about an animal than any other part of its skeleton.
Other examples of fossilized skulls.
Finding a complete specimen is rare, but it can tell us a great deal about how the animal lived.
A bird's eye view of the cliff, then drilling into the rock.
It's quite hot and thirsty work.
Steve and Chris think they will have about 3 weeks to dig the fossil out before the storms of late summer come.
This is a learning curve. I thought, stupidly, that it wouldn't be quite as hard as this. We're probably over a metre in. There's the skull there, just behind me. It's up to us now to get it out without any damage.
If the skull is successfully extracted, it will be taken to the Etches Collection Museum in Kimmeridge, which was founded by Steve in 2016 and now contains nearly 3,000 fossils from the Jurassic period. This was where the pliosaur snout was brought to be assessed. And I've come here to learn what Steve has found out so far.
What an extraordinary and terrifying thing. Huge teeth.
They are. They're massive. These big fang-like teeth that come up.
And they interlock.
Yes, they do.
So how far do these teeth extend?
They come right up here.
Is that characteristic of this?
Yes, typical pliosaur. Trihedral teeth, they're sort of, they've got two sharp cutting edges and then a flat face on the inside.
They must have used that to rip apart ichthyosaurs.
Ichthyosaurs, plesiosaurs as well. We got evidence in the museum, because they've got sub-triangular teeth. When they bite into a bone, they leave a very distinctive tooth hole.
Steve's collection contains a limb bone of a plesiosaur, another large marine reptile, which has bite marks on it that exactly match the size and shape of pliosaur teeth.
What a godsend it is that the teeth are triangular so that you're able to then identify prey.
Oh, yeah.
Just as much as you can identify the one that was the predator.
That's right.
Well, that's so pretty unusual to find teeth in position.
It is. This is the first pliosaur I've ever seen with actually closed jaws.
It is extraordinary. Mm. It is quite extraordinary.
And there is another unusual feature on this snout.
So let me show you the other side. I'll spin it round.
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of stuff here.
Oh, yeah.
And these holes here.
Well, I think these are sensory pits. They're all on the snout. If you look at them, they go... See, they strike back in at that angle, you know? They're sensory pits for picking up its prey, I'm pretty sure. Pretty impressive beast.
Astonishing.
Mm.
But exactly how did these sensory pits help our pliosaur to hunt?
David has a closer look.
These days, we have equipment that can help us answer such a question.
Gliding over a redstone building.
We take the snout to the University of Southampton, which has some of the most powerful CT scanners in the UK.
On that. That's it. Let me upright it.
Dr. Katie Rankin is a specialist in scientific imaging. She takes thousands of X-rays through the fossil that reveal its internal structure. But even with such high-tech equipment, the process is not straightforward.
The snout was very challenging. A typical CT scan can be around an hour. In this case, because the fossil was very, very dense, it actually took very, very long. So it took about 5 days.
5 days?
Yes.
With the scan finally complete, paleobiologist Dr. Neil Gostling is looking for clues about the sensory abilities of our pliosaur.
So what does this scan tell us?
I've taken the CT data and we can rack our way through this stack of images. We can see all of those internal structures which otherwise wouldn't have been revealed to us. And there are some things which are, I think, quite exciting. We've got these little structures in red, and I had to do these each one slice by slice, dot by dot, because there's lots of imperfections and holes in it. But these are continuous, and I think these are blood vessels, little branching blood vessels.
Oh, come on. You're telling me this block of stone can show blood vessels?
Yes. And what I think we've got here are actually branches of the trigeminal nerve, and these are the sensory nerves in your face and that allow you to feel fingers dancing over your cheeks and what have you. But if you're in water and you've got these sensory pits, you can detect changes in pressure. That's going to give you an advantage in what might be murky water where your eyes aren't working so well, so you can always be sure that you're going to catch your next meal.
Fantastic.
Knowing how these senses worked we can start to build up a picture of how our pliosaur hunted.
Open water.
Its prey, ichthyosaurs. Reptiles much the same shape as a modern dolphin, and similarly fast and agile. The sensory pits found on our pliosaur's snout may have acted like miniature pressure pads, detecting the turbulence produced by ichthyosaurs as they swam through deep water. In effect, our pliosaur was able to stalk its prey even in the darkest depths, just by using its skin.
The pliosaur is pursuing its prey.
There are animals today that have similar sensory systems. Crocodiles have over 9,000 pressure receptors which are concentrated on their snouts, each one of which is thought to be 10 times more sensitive than a human fingertip.
From the crocodile snout to the dig on the sheer cliff face.
2 weeks into the dig, and the work is proving to be even harder than anyone was expecting.
A cavity in the cliff.
Let me throw this big chunk away.
The rock tumbles down onto the shoreline. Fossil hunter Steve is clearing dirt away by hand. Now he's on a break.
The last couple of 3 days have been... I think it's been sapping everyone.
I think it might be a tooth, but it's got no crown.
Let's have it.
All right.
You wouldn't like this with David Attenborough, but you give him a little lip, did you?
Yeah, but I like him.
Oh, all right then.
Being 11 metres up a cliff is one challenge. Digging through incredibly hard rock with air tools. Every lump is hard won.
But at last, there's a breakthrough.
There's something under there which is huge. Here you've got the jaw showing, and this one's heading back this way. It's going to be the underneath of the skull.
There's a vertebra there. There's another vertebra there.
Finding these bones confirms that the entire skull really is inside the cliff.
It's nice to actually see something. You feel like you've been rewarded a bit.
What Alex is doing, he is chipping out a loose tooth. Hang on, that's the crown.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, keep going. This is part of the root, and there's a pulp cavity there. That tooth will be probably about 10 inches long.
Oh, the thunder's coming. Oh, look at that.
Just as the dig is revealing further exciting finds...
Go on, guys.
Yeah, come on, go. Chris.
Because we've got a lot to do. We've got to get you all up.
Conditions become treacherous, and the rope safety team decides that it's too dangerous to continue.
Now it's rained, this lithified mudstone has turned like a slippery clay. It's lethal. There's certainly no way now, with us stopping now, that we're going to get it done in those days left.
The weather may be against them, but finding a pliosaur tooth is a real stroke of luck. It could also help us understand more about the type of prey our sea monster could eat. Back in Southampton, the scan has revealed something even more intriguing about the pliosaur snout.
These teeth are extraordinarily well preserved, aren't they? Is there new information that we can get from this?
Well, from the CT scan, if we take it back again so we can expose the teeth. These are large pointed teeth, and these are really well adapted for grasping slippery fish, but this is on an order of magnitude larger, which would have allowed it to eat all sorts of prey that are swimming around in the ancient Kimmeridge Bay of the time.
Were the teeth permanent or were they replaced?
As we move it back through, we can see that we've got individual teeth almost all the way along. However, in one place, we've got this little tooth here, and this is a replacement tooth. The thing that most animals die of is that their teeth have worn out and they can't feed anymore. And if you are a large predator and you are catching large prey, you might lose teeth relatively frequently. Well, this isn't such an issue if you can replace your teeth multiple times throughout your life.
Not only were its teeth replaceable, but they were also shaped differently. Long and sharp towards the front of its jaws, more hook-like at the back. This deadly combination meant that pliosaurs could feed in a variety of ways, from grabbing large sharks and squid to gripping smaller, slippery fish.
The pliosaur catching small fish.
But pliosaur teeth have another special feature which scientists are only just beginning to understand.
David's holding two exhibits.
These are exact replicas cast from the teeth of our own pliosaur. As you can see, they're very large and also trihedral, three-sided. If we look closer at this one, we can see it has very distinct ridges, known as striations, that run vertically down the tooth.
A recent study by scientists in Australia investigated why pliosaur teeth had these ridges. And I'm keen to test some of these theories myself.
The research proposed that when the pliosaur plunged its teeth into its victim, these tooth ridges could have helped to not only pierce the flesh, but also prevent a vacuum forming.
So I am going to try and imitate our sea monster's bite using the replica teeth and a block of ballistic gel, an artificial equivalent to animal flesh.
This pliosaur tooth has had its ridges entirely removed. Without its striations, the surfaces are now completely smooth and flat. So firstly, if I plunge this smooth tooth into the gel...
He presses it in halfway.
That did feel difficult to push the tooth in and pull it out again. But now, if I repeat the same movement with the rich tooth, in theory, it should feel easier. Smoothly in. And I'll pull it out. No bother. Well, that certainly felt significantly easier.
To get a more scientific opinion, we test the teeth at the University of Bristol, and the results indicate that the ridged teeth do require less force to be pushed into the gel.
The scientific testing of the tooth.
While this area is new to science, it seems that the theories are on the right track. The ridges on its teeth could have enabled the pliosaur to more easily capture its prey underwater by allowing it to swiftly and repeatedly bite down, ensuring a quick, successful kill for this Jurassic sea monster.
An aerial view of the Jurassic coast and green fields beyond.
3 weeks into the dig, the weather is holding. And now the biggest question for Steve and Chris is how to lift the skull off the cliff.
I reckon we're taking out a big slab.
One piece?
Yeah. Cut it underneath.
What, cut underneath?
Yeah.
All the way through?
Yeah. Well, I can't see any other way of doing it. If we do it any other way, it's going to just crumble up. What do you think?
I think I'm going home and not coming back.
Luckily for Steve and Chris, friend and local farmer Rob Vernacombe has been devising a solution. He's building a crate which will be lowered down the cliff, into which the skull will be manoeuvred and then hauled up to the top.
Yeah, I'm actually a farmer by trade. Because of all the machinery and building that's involved, effectively, I'm a self-taught engineer, but it is a massive challenge from an engineering point of view.
Rob believes that the crate will enable them to get the skull safely to the top of the cliff.
The theory is that whatever angle the skids are, as it comes up the cliff, the box stays level to protect the fossil because we're trying to keep the fossil as level as possible.
The big day finally arrives, and a local army of helpers is assembled for this crucial stage of the operation. And Steve is feeling the pressure.
With the best will in the world, it looks like it's all going to function, but the risk is immense. You know, what happens if it just actually turned on its side? There's a lot of things that could go wrong, so it's a risky sort of time.
This is one of the largest and best-preserved pliosaur skulls ever found. So the stakes are very high indeed.
From the skull in the rock cavity to the crate being manoeuvred over the edge.
When it comes down, we've got to get that aligned and we've got to get that jaw, that skull, inside that box.
And we've got to be really careful that that sled has got a metal bar, and as it comes down, it doesn't hit the nose.
No one's ever done this before, ever.
Extracting a giant skull halfway down a cliff face.
The crate must be lowered into position with great precision if the skull is not to be damaged.
The position it's coming down in, it's almost it's going to glance the side of the skull.
Over!
Stop!
So somehow we've got to manually try and move the whole sled over.
I think we can afford to do 30 centimetres lower and no more.
After weeks of back-breaking work, emotions are running high.
Down! Come on!
Quick, quicker!
This moment's really fraught. We've got one skid just about glancing the side of the skull, and we've got to try and pull it out now to get it over the edge.
Very slowly, 6 inches.
One clumsy move, and the skull could be smashed.
On the ground, Chris and Steve are pulling the ropes attached to the sled.
Oh, my.
Oh, pull again.
That's all right, missed it.
We've done it.
Stop.
It's all pretty stressful. Every bit, part of this is really, really stressful.
After quite a few hours, we've got it into position. We haven't knocked the end of the snout off so far, and it's all ready to go.
But the next stage looks even more risky.
Just retreat from the edge, and we're going up the ropes now.
Al and Steve are going to go up to the hole and attach the winch, and then start the process of slowly dragging it into the box.
Shifting a fossil that weighs over half a ton is really dangerous.
Moving. It's very nervous and it's very tense, so let's see how it goes.
Chris is looking up at the delicate operation to move the skull into the crate.
Oh,
go on.
Yeah, that's better.
Whoa!
Right, I think slide it straight in.
Steve, is it OK? Has it come off OK?
Well, we're losing a bit of it, but you can't hold it, mate.
Go on.
Steve helps to guide the skull into the reinforced wooden box.
Right, keep going. Good, that'll do. That's well in.
It's right in the cage now.
Hey, the fossil's in.
Brilliant, well done. We're all cheering here. Well done, well done.
Well done, everybody.
Right, well done. Brilliant. We've overcome a lot of problems to get this far, and we've done it by the skin of our teeth.
The skull, at last, is in the crate.
Take up the sack again.
Oi.
But shifting it carelessly, let alone dropping it, could be disastrous.
Come over a bit. There'll be six ropes coming up to be able to lift it and hold it steady, hopefully. With the tide coming in and the sun setting, we couldn't cut it any finer.
With the ropes attached, a crane's heaving the crate up the cliff while the sled's keeping it level.
Finally, the skull is safe.
Brilliant, Rob.
Well done.
Well done.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's a dream come true. And I tell you what, I don't think anyone in their right would ever believe we could ever done it. 3 weeks ago, it was buried in a cliff face, found the top food chain predator, and now we're bringing it back to life. and this would be one of the best that's ever been found.
Steve's a little reluctant in the group hug.
None of that. Get off, you little devils. God, dear, oh dear. Is out. The next day starts.
A tractor's taking the crate away on the back of a flatbed trailer. A new day on the move.
The skull is transported to Steve's workshop.
Ready? Go. Right up.
Oh, my God. The mudstone's cracked and dried. Of course, what it's done is just crack the bone as well. Jeepers creepers.
You'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. I can see this is the biggest jigsaw going.
Luckily, you're a young man, though, aren't you?
Yeah.
Plenty of time.
Yeah, plenty of time.
The painstaking task of removing the stone from around the skull so that it can be examined in detail can at last begin. After the heavy work of the dig, this stage requires a delicate touch. First, Steve removes the rock surrounding the fossil so that the fragile areas of the skull can be strengthened. Then, using an air abrasion tool, he starts work to reveal the more intricate details about the anatomy of this extraordinary animal. This giant sea monster, after 150 million years, finally begins to emerge from the rock. And I have the privilege of coming to see this whole skull for the first time. So, here it is. And it's enormous. I am meeting Dr. Judith Sassoon, a paleontologist who has studied pliosaur specimens for decades. Does it still take your breath away as it takes mine?
It is a most astonishing specimen, David. I'm very pleased to be part of the work on it.
What insights can Judith give us into the life of this ancient monster?
The fossil surface.
How's it coming along? What sort of detail you can get from this which you never knew before?
Steve Etches has been working on it now for several months and has made some fabulous progress. We're seeing, as it's being prepared, gradually more and more detail being revealed. So far, we have some information about its senses.
Really? Was there eyesight good?
There are indications that, in fact, it could have been. The eyes themselves were quite important for this animal. One of the reasons is the position itself. The eyes are on the side of the head, more or less in the middle, so not too high and not too low.
This important feature of the skull may suggest how our pliosaur hunted in the open ocean.
An eye socket in the fossil.
The position of the eyes in living animals varies according to the way in which they hunt. Dolphins are pursuit predators. Their eyes are placed on the side of their heads, which gives them panoramic vision, enabling them to attack their prey with great accuracy. Ambush predators, such as crocodiles, have eyes higher up on their heads, so they can remain just below the surface with only their eyes above water and judge when to attack.
A crocodile erupts from the water to snatch a wildebeest.
Our pliosaur seems to have had something in between, with an eye position that not only enabled it to pursue prey through the water with accuracy, but alternatively surprise it by attacking from below. And there is another remarkable feature which could tell us more about where our sea monster may have hunted.
We talked about eyes. There's also another interesting structure. which is the parietal eye. In many reptiles, this still exists. When it is present in terrestrial animals, it has a full eye structure like the lateral eyes and is light sensitive.
In a rainforest.
The parietal eye on the top of the head is something of a puzzle. It's known as a third eye and is still found in a few living species. It apparently helps an animal to regulate its body clock.
An example of the parietal eye on a scaly reptile.
The pliosaur's parietal eye is thought to have had a lens, a cornea, and a retina. Although its exact function is unclear, it may have enabled our sea monster to gauge which way was up when swimming at depth and potentially navigate deeper hunting grounds.
What other questions would you have wished the skull to provide answers for?
I've already made some measurements on this animal, and the proportions do seem to be different from other pliosaurs that we know. The skull is quite long-snouted, but the position of the nose and the eye and also of the crest suggests that it is something else, something new.
A new species of pliosaur?
Of pliosaur, yes.
A new species?
Yes.
Really?
I think it could be, yes.
The revelation that our pliosaur could be a new species is truly exciting.
Bubbles escaping from the pliosaur's nostrils.
There are only 8 recognized species of pliosaur, and this skull is certain to provide new scientific data on the evolution of these mysterious marine reptiles.
I have to say, you take my breath away. The detail which you can deduce, it is mind-blowing, I think, and that's what paleontology is about. I used to think it was just a question of finding a fossil and digging it out and saying how nice it was. You made it sound rather different.
Judith shares a laugh with David.
In recent decades, huge advances have been made in our ability to study prehistoric animals. And we can now investigate the predator power of our pliosaur in more detail than ever before.
A bearded man with a laptop.
Paleobiologist Dr. Andre Rowe is a world-leading expert in 3D visualization of fossils.
First thoughts, this thing is absolutely massive. And I will also add that the level of preservation is amazing. There's this common misconception that fossilization is just this really common thing and we get these complete skulls all the time, and that's sadly not the case. This is actually a 1 in a million, maybe 1 in a billion type specimen here.
Using the latest technology, Andre is carrying out the world's first surface scan of a pliosaur skull.
An image forming on a monitor.
So right now we're capturing basically hundreds of thousands of images all at once, essentially putting together a big 3D jigsaw puzzle. The end result is a really nice looking 3D model, which we can use for biomechanics, studying the anatomy. I think we'll be able to unlock a lot of mysteries about what these sea monsters were doing. And I'm really excited to see where it takes us.
Once the scan has been finalized, I meet Andre at the University of Bristol to discuss his findings. Has he seen anything in the skull structure that shows our sea monster had the power of a truly deadly predator?
There's some massive openings back here along the jawline.
Yes.
And that's good for muscles to attach and bulge out.
There'd be a muscle running through there.
Yes, we have the pterygoid muscle group, which is in a lot of big dinosaurs, and it's integral to having a really strong bite. And we've hypothesized that this particular pliosaur is kind of the apex predator in the Jurassic ecosystems it was living in.
In the seas?
Yes. Hmm.
Now, this, is, of course, is not a dinosaur, but neither is it a modern reptile, but it does look a lot like a crocodile, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, we have this process called convergent evolution, where a lot of animals will adapt the similar-shaped skull or similar trends throughout their evolutionary history, even if they're not closely related. That's because having those similarities can give you a lot of advantages. But in terms of this pliosaur, it's got that kind of streamlined skull that's kind of broad in the back. It's very triangular shaped, and a lot of marine reptiles kind of have that skull shape. I think that it's good for swimming quickly and ambushing prey.
Does the skull give you any information about what animal's prey might have been?
The animal would have been so massive that I think it would have been able to prey effectively on anything that was unfortunate enough to be in its space. A popular hypothesis is that these animals were actually ripping off the limbs of other animals to disable them from swimming away, and then kind of going in for a kill.
So this is really a top predator?
Yes, I have very little doubt, just judging from how massive that skull is. I don't see what could have possibly hurt it.
What size is that, actually?
So the actual skull itself clocks in just a little under 2 meters.
2 meters, longer than I am.
Yeah. Oh. It's quite a big boy, and that's just the skull.
The dimensions of a fossilized skull enable us to estimate the overall size of an animal when it was alive. And based on Andre's measurements, our pliosaur could have been up to an astounding 12 meters long.
Just from the sheer size of it, just from looking at this animal and how big those pterygoid muscles would have been at the back of the jaw, the animal would have delivered a devastating bite, no doubt.
A powerful bite is vital to the success of any marine predator. Scientists are able to estimate how much force an animal can exert when biting into its prey. And great white sharks have one of the strongest bites, at around 10,000 newtons.
A great white catching its prey.
But how do you work out the bite force of a creature that became extinct millions of years ago? Professor Emily Rayfield is a world-renowned paleontologist who specializes in skeletal mechanics. Using the model created by Andre, Emily has assessed the bite force of our pliosaur.
So this is a 3D print, a model. It's not full size, though it's just over a third of the size of the actual animal. These large openings are the spaces in the skull which would have been filled with jaw-closing muscles.
So you can estimate the force of the bite from the size of those muscles?
Exactly, yeah, we can get an estimate of that from here. We know that muscles of a certain size, a certain area, are capable of generating a certain amount of force. Saltwater crocodiles have got the largest ever bite force measured, and they're up to about 16,000 newtons.
And these?
So our pliosaur here, from the estimations that we've made, has a bite force that's about twice the size of that of the largest saltwater crocodile that's ever been measured. And it's in the region of around 32,000 newtons.
So this is the most powerful biter in the sea that ever has been, or that we know of?
That we know of, absolutely, yes, definitely. If you're looking at kind of statistics in terms of car biting metrics, I'm pretty sure it could probably bite through a car.
So it's a monster?
Absolutely.
The scale model of the marine monster's head. David's on the boat.
The evidence gathered from the skull so far suggests that this pliosaur had the jaws, teeth, and senses of a highly successful hunter.
Its long snout, short neck, and streamlined skull enabled it to move easily through the water. But what else helped our enormous sea monster to power through the Jurassic seas fast enough to catch its prey?
Pliosaurs were unique in the natural world, as they had 4 almost identical wing-like flippers. How pliosaurs used their flippers has been debated by paleontologists for decades.
Some believe that they moved using a sort of rowing stroke, like oars in a boat, while others argued they used a flight stroke, seen in animals such as sea turtles. But in recent years, scientists have been able to use computer modeling to finally solve this mystery. And it appears that these giant sea monsters swam in a way that is surprisingly similar to a very different type of animal, one that is alive today.
Now, a penguin's pecking at David's shoe.
Boy. Penguins may appear somewhat clumsy as they waddle around on land, but once they're in the water, they move very differently. These are Humboldt penguins, and they're excellent swimmers. Their streamlined body shape and their oily feathers enable them to reach astonishing speeds of up to 30 miles an hour. But a key factor behind penguin speed are their flippers, which underwater act like propellers, driving them forward and increasing their speed dramatically. In slow motion, you can see that the penguins are using a lift-based underwater flight movement, twisting their wings as they flap and propelling themselves forward on the upstroke as well as the downstroke. As strange as it may seem, it's thought that pliosaurs would have moved in a very similar way. But of course, pliosaurs were enormous, and most large animals are relatively slow moving. So, as an apex predator, how could this huge creature maneuver itself fast enough to catch its prey? To find out, I've come to the Hydrodynamic Laboratory at Imperial College London, where Dr. Luke Muscat is studying the locomotion of pliosaurs using a rather unusual research tool. How did you first become interested in the way that pliosaurs swam?
The only animal that we know of that has four large flippers. So the question is, how did they use them? When we're trying to understand an extinct animal, first thing we need to do is look at the fossils. So we understand the shape of the bones, how the bones fit together. The fossils of the pliosaur show that the flippers were very much like wings. So what I found was that the hind flipper can actually operate at a much higher thrust and at a much higher efficiency because it's utilizing the wake of the flipper in front of it. We can see a similar effect in the flight of migrating birds such as geese.
When geese are flying in formation, each bird benefits from the uplift created by the one in front of it, so that they fly in a very energy-efficient way.
So you can think of the pliosaur as almost two birds, one flying behind the other, and the back one is benefiting from the one in front.
That's an extraordinary parallel, yes.
The hind flipper has increases in thrust and efficiency of up to 40%.
Oh.
So this would have increased the swimming speed that pliosaurs would have been able to achieve and increased the number of different things it could eat.
To take his research to the next level, Luke has built a robot to study the swimming pattern of pliosaurs more accurately than ever before. So what more information do you think you can get from this model?
This robot enables me to test the complete animal. How fast something can move is an absolutely critical part of what that animal is. And it tells us what animals it could have eaten, how far it might have been able to travel. All sorts of questions come back down to its locomotion ability.
Have you estimated the speed that this might produce?
Well, I've only finished building this yesterday, so
oh, really?
So far I haven't actually ran the experiments yet. If you'd like to have a go, you're more than welcome to...
Yes. Oh, show me.
So if you just move this joystick sort of upwards further. So this is how the pliosaur would have swam. The flippers move primarily up and down. It's much more like a bird flies.
Luke and his team set up the robot for a test swim, and they entrust me with its maiden voyage.
If you'd like to take the control? There we are. It's off. Really got some high acceleration there.
Well, I suppose, actually, that's only a model, but if it was full-size, it would be going quite fast.
Indeed. You can just imagine it chasing after a smaller ichthyosaur.
Luke's research is so new, it's yet to be published. But it's helping to provide a new perspective on these extraordinary animals.
A pod of killer whales.
Large marine predators like orcas can swim at great speed through the ocean. What speed might our pliosaur, with its four flippers, have been capable of? Estimates suggest that they could have accelerated up to 30 miles an hour, making them one of the fastest animals in the Jurassic seas.
The pliosaur dives at speed, then just fails to catch an ichthyosaur in its jaws. A 3D image of the skull.
This skull is not only helping us to understand more about the lives of these giant sea monsters, but also allows scientists like Dr. André Rowe to visualize the Jurassic world as never before.
So often I've been involved in looking at fossil skeletons and the skull, unless the skull is there, you're really missing an awful lot of information. We are lucky to find this as the first thing.
Yes, I am very biased since I study feeding and teeth, but I think the majority of the information about an animal you can get from its skull. Yeah. The brain, the teeth, what it was feeding on, its maximum body size if you have the whole skull. It's just a treasure trove of information, and we're very fortunate to have the whole thing. One of the reasons why I love the UK is because it's got such a great collection of marine reptiles.
Delighted to hear it.
I mean, in America, we've got our big tyrannosaurs and our triceratops, but the UK is great for marine reptiles.
Well, we did discover the dinosaurs. Yeah.
Yes, the science of paleontology did originate here.
How would it compare with T. rex?
I imagine it would be pretty comparable, and they were kind of both the respective apex predators in their ecosystems. So I have no doubt that this was sort of like an underwater T. rex, if you will.
Okay. Let me ask you the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. In a battle between T-Rex and our pliosaur, who's going to win?
As much as it pains me and brings a tear to my eye to admit it, I think my T-Rex is going to lose this fight. And then millions of years later, American paleontologists will envision the scene and break down into tears.
The Jurassic Coast.
Bringing an enormous predator back to life after 150 million years is no easy task. But restoring this giant skull is a labor of love for Steve and his team. Almost a year after the skull was discovered, I returned to Kimmeridge to see how they're getting on.
My goodness. It is absolutely magnificent. It's astonishing.
It's bigger than a T-Rex.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the skull?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, bigger than any T-Rex ever found.
David, now what we've done since you've come here last is I've air penned off all the mudstone and then air braided it. Now the air braced machine cleans out all these little voids, and you see every little detail, every suture where the bones join together, you can see every detail. That's what we really wanted.
So the teeth here had been basically tumbled on the beach, and the shingle had worn away all the crowns, so we can do a bit of dentistry on them. So we've got this tooth which has been scanned, and then we're going to increase or decrease it, and then add all the teeth back in position. Show people what it actually looked like.
You must feel looking at this. I mean, I know it was a huge amount of work to get it out.
We never thought we'd get it, to be honest. I'll be honest with you.
Well, it's certainly a triumph.
Yeah, quite an emotional moment for everyone. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
A sensation.
A snout with the ferocious teeth in place.
Once the pliosaur's dagger-like teeth are added, the picture is finally complete.
The interlocking teeth.
Our journey of discovery has shown that this sea monster was one of the greatest predators the world has ever seen. And we can now visualize more accurately than ever how it may have hunted in the Jurassic seas.
Flying over open water with marine reptiles below.
Ichthyosaurs, swimming in groups along the coast, concentrating on hunting their prey, unaware that they themselves are being stalked.
The sea monster.
On their trail, our pliosaur uses its highly tuned senses to launch an attack.
An ichthyosaur evades the snapping jaws.
In the chase, its four flippers, each 2 meters long, drive it through the water at great speed.
The pliosaur in pursuit.
Splitting the shoal, it isolates its target. Our sea monster's primary weapons are its 90 razor-sharp teeth, with which it slices through its victim's flesh.
It bites down.
The impact alone may have been enough to kill. But with a bite force twice the strength of any animal living today, its prey had little chance of survival.
Blood colours the water as the sea monster swims off with the ichthyosaur in its jaws. Fins break the surface briefly, then the sea is calm. The small boat motoring across the sea. David's on board.
From a chance discovery on a beach one morning to the painstaking restoration of such a rare and impressive specimen, the story of this fossil is one of skill, dedication, and of fascinating scientific discoveries made along the way. We've been given a unique insight into the life of our pliosaur that swam in the Jurassic seas 150 million years ago, but we're also reminded that there is still so much to learn about these extraordinary prehistoric animals. And I, for one, will never tire of discovering more.
The pliosaur swims by the stationary boat.